From NPR, it's Latino USA. Today, we remember the Chicano movement of the 1960s and 70s and the Mexican-American civil rights leader Reyes López Tijerina. Nearly forgotten, he's been called the ultimate Chicano nationalist revolutionary.
This is the fire that is coming out of the volcano. And as much as the devil, as much as the oppressor would like to have the world believe that I'm a militant, that I'm a violent man, he is mistaken. For I am as violent as Jesus Christ.
In 1967, Reyes López Tijerina led an armed raid on the Tierra Amarilla County Courthouse in New Mexico, fighting for what he said was the defense of land rights.
Reyes, knowledgeable of the law, said they violated our civil rights, so we have the right to do a citizen's arrest, and that's what we're going to do.
That's coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa, but first, this news.
From the Latino USA News Desk, I'm Mincho Jacob. As part of our year-long focus on health, today we look at what medical researchers call the Hispanic paradox. Latinos run a high risk of getting heart disease, but they have fewer heart attacks and strokes than the general population. In other areas of health, however, Latinos are not so lucky, with high rates of obesity and diabetes causing widespread problems. So in 2006, the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, along with the National Institutes of Health, launched the largest health study of the Latino community to date, with plans to look at nearly 16,000 volunteers over 6 years. Greg Talavera is one of the main researchers of the study. He's also a professor of public health at San Diego State University. He joins us now for an overview of the study and its purpose. Welcome to Latino USA, Dr. Talavera.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
So when we think of Latino health, some of the things we've been hearing a lot in the last few years is definitely about diabetes, about obesity. Is this as big of a problem as we've been hearing lately, and what has your study been showing?
Well, our study is still in its data collection phase right now, but we know from the literature that Latinos suffer higher rates of diabetes and obesity and have lower access to care, decreased adherence to their treatment plans, and participate less in prevention. So there's definitely disparities that exist within that community. One of the unique features of this study is the fact that we will be able to look at both the psychosocial dimensions of diabetes, the biological dimensions of diabetes, and the genetic dimensions of diabetes. There's been no study to date that has been able to have a large sample like this and have such a comprehensive set of medical information to help explore the causes of the diabetes and the causes for the disparities.
You did mention the diversity in the Latino community. How has that been a challenge in doing a study of this type when you have a population that's diverse ethnically? How does that affect the research?
Well, it was a challenge in terms of our recruitment. Our goal for this study was to recruit individuals representative of diverse backgrounds of Hispanics and Latinos. For instance, we specifically targeted Central and South Americans, Cubans, Mexicans, Puerto Ricans, and Dominicans to create a sample or a cohort that would be representative of those living in here in the United States right now. Generally speaking, and if you read the literature or talk with people, they tend to lump Latinos all into one group in terms of their health status and their health conditions. But we're seeing that there is quite a bit of variation in terms of, you know, which group has greater rates of obesity, which group has greater rates of diabetes, and so forth.
What we mentioned at the top was the Hispanic paradox that we see with lower rates of heart attacks and strokes. Is that also something that you're looking at in the study?
Yes. One of the primary goals of the study is, A, to verify that the paradox exists. There's never been a study of Hispanics large enough and long enough to really follow people along to see what the prevalence and incidence of cardiovascular disease is. But this study is actually following people over time so that we can look at new cases of cardiovascular disease to determine whether that paradox exists.
So when does this study actually come to a close, and what do you hope happens with this material?
The baseline information that we collected from the examination at the beginning of the study, which includes all 16,000 individuals, is just being analyzed right now, and we should be publishing in the next year. And we also hope that the NIH will refund the study and continue it for a long period of time. We're in a stage of the study now where we're really focusing on retention of the 16,000 individuals so that we can continue to see them. So it's important for those participants to understand that this is a long-term commitment and relationship in the study and will contribute valuable information to the Hispanic Latino community.
Dr. Talavera, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Greg Talavera is a researcher for the Hispanic Community Health Study. He's also a professor of public health at San Diego State University. Funding for our year-long look at Latinos in health is made possible by funding from Pfizer with Pfizer Helpful Answers, a family of patient assistant programs for patients in need at PfizerHelpfulAnswers.com. Maria Hinojosa is back in 30 seconds. Stay with us.
It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. In June of 1967, in the small town of Tierra Amarilla, New Mexico, a group of New Mexican Hispanos, calling themselves La Alianza, or the Alliance, attempted to make a citizen's arrest of the state district attorney, who had used police to break up a public meeting by Alianza members. What happened during the days that followed looked like a revolution to the rest of the country, and the attention of the authorities fell mainly on La Alianza's fiery, charismatic leader, a man by the name of Reyes López Tijerina. A former Pentecostal preacher from a South Texas ranching community, Tijerina went to New Mexico to take on the issue of recovering lost land grants for old Hispano families. Today, we have a special rebroadcast of a documentary about Reyes López Tijerina. Producer Adam Satanides traveled to the Mexican Central Highlands, where he found an aging Tijerina. And here now is his story, titled New Mexico's Memory of Land, The Legacy of Tijerina.
Academics often describe Reyes López Tijerina as a co-founder, along with Cesar Chavez and others, of the Chicano civil rights movement in the 1960s and 70s. While Cesar Chavez used nonviolence to defend the rights of farm workers, Tijerina and his followers were often armed as they fought for millions of acres of land that rural Chicanos claim were stolen from them in the 100 years since the Mexican-American War. Historically, most of the Old Southwest was settled by Spanish-speaking frontiersmen. These pioneers were given property by the Spanish and Mexican governments in the form of land grants. But ever since the U.S.-Mexico War in 1848, the land grants were largely dismantled. As more and more Anglos moved in and fenced the longtime Mexicano families out of hereditary grazing lands and hunting grounds, New Mexico's rural Chicanos grew bitter and hopeless. The centuries-old pastoral lifestyle of the northern New Mexicans was slowly dying. Into this volatile scene stepped Reyes López Tijerina. Tijerina insisted that the land grants were protected by the 1848 Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, which carved the American West out of Old Mexico. He denounced what he called the gringos' theft of Mexican land and quietly organized the land-grant heirs of New Mexico into the Alianza Federal de Mercedes, or Alianza for short. He vowed to recover the New Mexicans' lost lands and restore their dignity by any means necessary.
Rey López Tijerina, the Alianza, the brown people, the Indo-Hispano, this is the fire that is coming out of the volcano, which is in the northern part of New Mexico. And as much as the devil, as much as the enemy, as much as the oppressor would like to have the world believe that I'm a king tiger, that I'm a militant, that I'm a violent man, he is mistaken, for I am as violent as Jesus Christ.
Years of anger in northern New Mexico finally erupted on June 5, 1967, when Reyes Tijerina led 20 armed members of his Alianza in an audacious daylight raid on the Rio Arriba County Courthouse in Tierra Amarilla. Guns blazed as Tijerina's group stormed the courthouse, wounding a police officer and a jailer in the process. United Press International reporter Larry Calloway happened to be in the main lobby of the courthouse in a phone booth, calling in his daily report at the very moment the raid occurred.
And I just about finished dictating, and blam, there's a big shot right behind me. I turned around, and a state cop who had been standing there was down. And I hit the floor. I got down, ducked. And the next half hour or so, this all hell broke loose. There were a lot of gunshots. There were people running back and forth. There were people screaming. At one time, I looked up, and I saw Ticarina.
The aliancistas were after State District Attorney Alfonso Sanchez. Sanchez had recently used police muscle to shut down a scheduled Alianza rally in nearby Coyote, New Mexico, where hundreds of land-grant heirs and civil rights activists from across the country were expected to meet. To stop the rally, Sanchez ordered roadblocks along the highways and rounded up much of the organization's leadership. Carlos Cancino was a ranking member of the Alianza at the time.
They got arrested everybody on charges of stealing chickens, of killing bear out of season, drunken driving, you know, they dug up the old records, alcohol.
Police with rifles had surrounded the schoolhouse in Coyote where the Alianza meeting was supposed to happen. Tijerina himself escaped the dragnet, but his historic gathering had to be canceled.
So Reyes got real mad, and they knew that on the following Monday in the courthouse of Tierra Maria, there were going to be 10 officials of the Alianza were going to be tried.
As Tijerina sat in a safe house on a nearby ranch, radio broadcasts reported that District Attorney Sanchez himself would be present for Monday's arraignment at the courthouse.
When I heard in the radio that they had gotten so many of our people and that they were going to arraign them that morning, oh, God forbid, I felt something, a spirit. First thing that came to me is go to Tierra Maria and get Sanchez at all costs.
So Reyes, knowledgeable of the law, said they violated our civil rights, so we have the right to do a citizen's arrest, and that's what we're going to do.
Tijerina wanted to turn the tables on the law and arrest the district attorney for violating the Alianza's constitutional right to free assembly. But Sanchez wasn't at the courthouse that day. Neither were the Alianza prisoners. Again, UPI reporter Larry Calloway.
The guys in the truck arrived maybe half an hour too late. There were 17 or 18 armed men covered by canvas, and they pulled up in front of the courthouse, and they stormed in. They had all sorts of varieties of guns. You know, everybody has a gun in New Mexico. And they went in, and the first thing that happened was a state cop got shot. Then there was a lot of shooting.
Young militants sprayed automatic weapons fire at parked police cars and pocked the courthouse with bullets. A stray round whizzed past Calloway as he crouched in fear inside the phone booth, still talking to his UPI editor.
Baltazar Martinez, a young guy with a military carbine with a black beret on, kicked open the door, stuck the muzzle of the gun in my face, and took me prisoner, basically, tied me up. Shoved me into the county commission room. There were a lot of scared people already sitting in the county commission room. Every employee of the courthouse was there.
Almost instantly, radio broadcasts and newswires were abuzz with reports that a revolution had begun in New Mexico. The National Guard and state police began pouring into the plaza. Tijerina fled high into the mountains with a handful of his Tierra Maria warriors who knew every trail, stream, and hillside. Perched on a mountaintop, Tijerina listened to the news on a transistor radio and watched the small army being assembled to hunt him below, while helicopters buzzed overhead.
On top of the mountain, I saw these trucks they use, you know, long base to take the battle tanks, you know.
They brought tanks up?
Oh, yeah. Right on top of Manco del Burro, is the name of that mountain, way up there. I was watching about half a mile or 1 mile of army vehicles, all kinds.
What ensued was the biggest manhunt in New Mexico history. But military and police officials never found Tijerina, who remained in the nearby countryside, hidden by local ranchers. Meanwhile, police arrested Tijerina's second wife, Patricia, clinging to her 7-month-old baby and pregnant at the time. With his family incarcerated, Tijerina decided to turn himself in, feeling vindicated by finally getting the world's attention. When he was led into prison, hundreds of inmates cheered his arrival, shouting, "Viva Tijerina!" It was a hero's welcome. Later, somewhere in the cell block, a new corrido was playing on the radio. As Tijerina listened to the lyrics, he began to weep. The song had been recorded only days before, and told the story of the courthouse raid and the injustice Chicanos faced in northern New Mexico.
Año del 67, 5 de junio fue el día. Hubo una revolución allá por Tierra María.
The press descended like locusts on New Mexico to cover Tijerina and his movement. But the glare of the media spotlight did little to clarify the complex 100-year-old dispute over Mexican land grants that was roiling in the northern half of the state. As Larry Calloway recalls, the National Press Corps just didn't get it.
You had to explain it to the Eastern press. They refused to believe that this was a serious protest. They didn't understand the land issues, the water issues, the land grant situation. They tended to, once again, put that big grin on their face and treat the thing as a Western movie, as something sort of quaint and comical, like a Mexican Revolution, Pancho Villa and all.
The manhunt for 25 people took on the appearance of a grade B movie about a Mexican Revolution.
A 1969 NBC television documentary titled The Most Hated Man in New Mexico portrayed Tijerina as a criminal threat to society. Chicano leader José Ángel Guitérrez is one of Tijerina's contemporaries. Guitérrez is co-founder of La Raza Unida Party and the Center for Mexican-American Studies at the University of Texas at Arlington, where he is a professor of political science.
This was the media's attempt to sensationalize the issue and to begin character assassination of Reyes López Tijerina, discredit the movement as a radical, subversive, possibly communist effort.
Rio Arriba County, New Mexico, one of the poorest counties in the United States, is home for people who are Americans in name only.
I've been telling everyone all along that Reyes López Tijerina professes communism, and the sooner we believe that, the better.
If there was anything about the idea, he was rabid anti-communist. He still is. But these were labels that once you get plastered with, you can't shake them off. It was an attempt to cut him off early, to turn public opinion against him.
Reyes Tijerina arouses strong emotions in New Mexico, especially here in the mountainous north, where years of isolation and inbreeding have produced a people who are intensely passionate and sometimes violent. These are survivors of the 16th century Spanish dream of wealth in the New World. They exist on welfare, handouts, subsistence farming, and food stamps.
It seemed no one in the national media or in Washington would take Tijerina's land grant movement seriously, but it was deadly serious business in New Mexico, where people have a long memory and old documents to back up their claims.
Northern New Mexico had been seething probably since 1846. Many families, I've talked to people, had old papers in a trunk, and they'd bring them out and almost tremble as if they were talking about Spanish gold or something that could be discovered and recovered. This tradition was still alive. Tijerina stepped in and he picked it up. And he was fiery. He was talented. He was a true leader. And uncompromising.
Ese tigre norteño del güerito fue el azote.
We've been listening to the story of Chicano nationalist Reyes López Tijerina. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back in just 1 minute. So, quédense con nosotros. Stay with us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And we continue now with our documentary about Chicano leader Reyes López Tijerina, produced by Adam Satanides.
It was nearly 18 months later when Tijerina and his followers finally went to trial for the Tierra Amarilla courthouse raid. Over those 18 months, Tijerina's celebrity had grown enormously. He had worked closely with Dr. Martin Luther King before his assassination to plan the Poor People's March on Washington, D.C., and went on to lead the march that summer with Reverend Ralph Abernathy. But in Tierra Amarilla, Tijerina had boldly challenged government authority, and prosecutors were determined to put him away. A couple of weeks into the courthouse raid trial, Tijerina was dealt a setback. The judge ruled that he would be tried separately from the other Alianza defendants. His defense, which his lawyers had carefully prepared over the past 18 months, was scrapped. Tijerina needed a new strategy, and in a desperate, improvised move, he dismissed his attorneys, hoping this would buy him some time. It was a legal maneuver, he learned, from the highly publicized trial of Dr. King's assassin, James Earl Ray.
My argument for the defense was that James Earl Ray had just dismissed his attorneys and he had asked for 6 months to prepare himself and was given the 6 months. He said, Mr. Tijerina, you got 30 minutes to get ready. And I twisted like a worm in the fire.
Although he was a brilliant and moving public speaker, Tijerina had little formal education. Raised as a migrant farm worker, as a child, he did not have the opportunity to attend school full-time. But Tijerina rose to the occasion. He argued that the United States Constitution gave citizens the right to use force, if necessary, to detain public officials who had broken the law, and that the courthouse raid was merely a citizen's arrest gone haywire.
I had educated myself on the question of citizen's arrest. How far could you go? And it says that you must use all possible force. We had the right to arrest even the president.
One by one, law enforcement officers broke down under Tijerina's cross-examination. Tijerina says the pivotal moment came when Rio Arriba County Undersheriff Daniel Rivera took the stand. On the day of the raid, Undersheriff Rivera was hiding in a locked room until Tijerina stepped up and blew the door off its hinges with a burp gun. As Rivera was taken prisoner, he was smashed in the head with a rifle butt. But somehow, Tijerina miraculously turned the undersheriff's testimony upside down, and the lawman ended up forgiving Tijerina for the events of that day.
Oh, he began to break so sweet for me, so sweet for the defense. Finally, he splashed and shakes and says, Mr. Tijerina, I'm not blaming you for anything that happened in the courthouse. No more question, Your Honor. I had been exonerated right there and then.
In a stunning verdict, the jury found Tijerina not guilty. The New Mexican establishment was furious. Newspaper editorials called for a retrial, and District Attorney Sanchez, his political career ruined, fumed as the rebellious Tijerina was set free. Assaults on the Alianza building in Albuquerque and on Tijerina's family became more frequent in the weeks that followed. The home of Tijerina's first wife and family was bombed, and shots were fired at his house.
All in all, 5 bombs were put in my home, my car, and my office.
But Tijerina's old arrests for political activism were beginning to catch up with him. He faced various charges for confrontations with the Forest Service and federal agents over the land grants, and his appeals had run their course. The straw that finally sent him to prison involved an incident in Abiquiu, New Mexico, when his wife Patricia torched a Forest Service sign on property local Hispanos said rightfully belonged to the community. Again, Jose Angel Gutierrez.
Well, that's destruction of federal property. It's almost like spitting in the post office, okay? And it basically carries like a $25 fine if you're caught. I say that because 2 young kids stole a forest sign about 2 months after Tijerina's wife did what she did, and they were fined $25 for the sign. Yet Tijerina refused to let his wife go to jail, so he admitted guilt when he wasn't guilty.
The judge sentenced Tijerina to 9 years in prison for arson and for threatening law enforcement officials with a gun. It was the first in a series of convictions and rejected appeals that eventually piled 26 years onto Tijerina's sentence. In 1970, the government sent Tijerina to a federal prison for the mentally deranged in Springfield, Missouri.
I was put with 90 others who were psycho.
Tijerina says he was forced to take psychotropic drugs and was threatened that he'd lose his chance at parole if he refused to take the green syrupy liquid.
One time after supper, I take that green stuff and I laid in my bunk. And by God, I couldn't move now, no part of my body. Then I swear to God, and then I got panic and I couldn't talk. I was terrified. I felt that was it for me. I was going to die. I was going to die. There was no one to help me.
2 years after arriving in federal prison, Tijerina was allowed to return to New Mexico under strict conditions of parole that prevented him from speaking publicly about the land grants or leading the Alianza. But he continued to fight for civil rights by organizing conferences designed to promote racial harmony amongst African Americans, Native Americans, Hispanics, and Anglos. In 1974, he was sent to New Mexico State Prison for another 6 months when his appeal of the state charges related to the Tierra Amarilla raid ran out. Throughout the late 1970s and into the 1980s, Tijerina was still revered and in great demand, but the Alianza gradually disintegrated, and the more radical elements of the Chicano movement became disillusioned, distancing themselves from the new, less militant Tijerina. Others discredited Tijerina for going too far, saying that he crossed a big line when he unleashed violent forces in Tierra Amarilla. Today, he lives in self-imposed exile from the United States with his third wife, Esperanza.
I've been living in Mexico for 10 years. Why did I move? Because they wanted me out of the picture. They wanted me to stop that. And I don't want to die yet.
Suffering from advanced diabetes, Tijerina is confined to bed and lives in constant pain. But at 78 years old, Tijerina's mind is still sharp, and he follows world events and United States politics with as keen an interest as ever.
I look at the news every day, although I'm sick right now and in bed, but that doesn't stop me from watching.
Tijerina says that the occupation of Iraq has shown the world that the United States does not stand for freedom. Instead, he says it proves that the U.S. is always willing to use military force to get whatever it wants, whether we're talking about Mexican land in the 19th century or Iraqi oil today. Tijerina today remains convinced of the righteousness of his cause. Even though he's but a shadow of the fiery figure he once was, his revolutionary fire still burns bright.
Así es Nuevo México. Así es esta tierra del sol. De sierras y valles, de tierras brutales. Así es Nuevo México.
Latino USA is produced by Mincho Jacob and Andres Caballero. Our documentary was produced by Adam Seitanidis. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join me again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Funding for Latino USA is provided in part by the Marguerite Casey Foundation, supporting families leading change.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at GatesFoundation.org. And the Poetry Foundation, celebrating 100 years of Poetry Magazine, online at poetryfoundation.org. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, supporting research on how social factors like housing and jobs affect health. Learn more at rwjf.org. This is NPR.